Lindor liftoff, deep right field, Kepler's back, he's out of room, it's out of here. It's a slow ball. Hit it out onto the tarp in right field, and Lindor with a two-run homer here in the sixth has put the Indians on top 3-2, and boy, is he jacked up.
A flow ball. That's what we're calling that now.
Yeah.
A flow ball. And you hit a home run off the progressive tarp. A flow ball.
I don't even want to go there. Okay. Like, there's too many things I could say that could potentially get me in trouble, and they weren't worth it, and so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah. Well, season's over. I take back everything good I said about the Twins 2 days ago.
Biggest loss of the year.
It might
yes
have been.
Or no?
It
Let's talk
been.
About it next. No.
Football.
We're going to break a baseball game down like it's football. It's also a Write That Down Wednesday on the show today. Mackie and Judd. And let's just say we have changes in the batting average standings. God. But a quick shout out to Federated Mutual Insurance Company. Federated's been helping businesses in the state of Minnesota and around the country for over 100 years. And this is just not the year to be wishy-washy about your insurance company if you're a business owner. Federated has experience and has helped countless businesses with everyday challenges and risk management. And also everything from pandemic response plans and HR-related communications. If you want to find a full list of industries Federated protects and see if your business matches up, go to federatedinsurance.com. Remember, at Federated Mutual Insurance Company, it's our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Now, Rich has thrown, I think, about three innings this month, and we wanted to make sure that as he progresses and builds up, that he's fully ready to do it. There is a pretty decent chance he's going to go on 5 days next time out. And sending him out there simply to face a few more hitters, we weren't going to let him go that much further either way. I think it was just the wise thing long term.
Football.
All right, we got Write That Down. We got Bobby Marks coming up shortly here with some reckless Timberwolves speculation. At least we're going to drag him into it.
Yep.
I'm assuming he's a willing participant,
as
he always been.
Oh, yeah.
He'll do it.
But we'll dive in.
We got it.
But let's start, as usual, by breaking a baseball game down like it's football. All right. I know I said that the season was over off the top of the show there, but I kid. I jest. Because I actually think the biggest takeaway from last night is Rich Hill. And even though he sputtered early and he was dropping non-FCC friendly words loudly in an empty stadium.
And grunting.
And grunting aggressively and just laboring and doing all the things that old 40-year-old near broken down Rich Hill does. He winds up grinding his way for five innings, one earned run. He strikes out five in the five innings. He looked sharper as the start went along. And so I know they got beat last night, but I don't think Shane Bieber was ever supposed to lose to Rich Hill coming off of missing most of the year to this point.
Yeah.
And so I know that you're probably not feeling this way, but I actually take mostly positive out of yesterday because of Rich Hill.
The Rich Hill dynamic for sure is positive. And in fact, if you go back to when they had Ramirez picked off first base and Sano threw the ball into left field, if he makes a good throw there, he pitches a five and gives up no runs. So I've spent the last 12 hours or so processing this loss and the many different feelings that this loss gave me. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's not the appropriate accompaniment to play. Because, and I was going back and forth on text last night with our guy, Jake Depew, who I do the Score North Twin Show with a lot. And he brought up a really good point. And the more I thought about it, he's exactly right. Right or wrong, but with where the Twins stand right now, this was clearly deemed going into that game, I think because of the guy that they were starting against and because they had won game one and because the Twins are in, you know, great shape playoff-wise, this was a disposable game. Like, you could take your chances here. And Rich Hill, and I think the thought process by the Twins going into last night was, okay, it's Bieber, right, against Rich Hill, who's not really pitching much. And I still stand by my, Phil, contention that Rich Hill is being ramped up to the playoffs. So, like, I don't think there's this large worry about, oh, my God, he didn't pitch well against the Brewers, we're going to take him out of the rotation. Or, oh, my God, he's pitching well against Bieber, so now let's throw him into the sixth or seventh.
This is actually his spring training, is what's
exactly
happening.
Exactly. But no. I have condoned that since day one. So I think that this was deemed by the Twins, not in the fifth last night, but actually before the game started, as a somewhat disposable game that they didn't expect to win. And I think they acted like it. And because there are 16 teams going to the playoffs, this is going to sound weird, but the approach that you might take to an NBA or a hockey game is sort of the approach that the Twins took to this game.
They did, and it's a good point you bring up there. It doesn't count in the good point standings, but it counts for your ego. That if this was
ego after those ice cream bars last night.
Wow.
Two ice cream bars.
Your ego is inflated after eating ice cream?
The whole Zolgad experience inflated right now.
All of Zolgad.
Like normal
is
size,
inflated.
Too? Were they large? Are they small?
Normal size.
Normal size.
Two Kemp's bars.
Good. Wow. Did you go in expecting to eat two Kemp's bars, or did you eat the first one? You were like, all right,
I need a second.
Oh, yeah. It's always that. It's always, I want one. Hold on a second. One's not good enough.
You know, I always do, I get those little mini, are they pints? I don't know, these little like things of ice cream that you find just, you know, the individual things.
Yeah.
And I get the dairy-free ones because of lactose issues. And I always say, I'll eat half of it tonight and then I'll eat half of it tomorrow. That never happens. I just eat the whole thing.
Why would you go dainty?
In terms of dairy-free or the smaller?
The smaller.
Just
the dairy-free is smart.
I don't have self-control.
No, I know, but I mean, you should just upfront. Once you start to eat sweets, you're basically done.
But that's why you have to buy the small ones. If you buy the small ones, you don't have self-control, it's like, that's why I don't have eight bags of Doritos in my house.
Oh, that was
because I love Doritos.
But what I'm saying,
if I had eight bags of Doritos,
I agree
I'd eat
with
them
you.
All.
But if you are going to carve out a night or a time to say, I've got a sweet tooth, you can't then say, but I'll have half of this sweet. Like once you commit, you commit.
Yeah, I'm finding,
it's like
I'm
a break,
finding that.
It's like a breaking ball that's diving down, and you've committed to try to hit that SOB. You can't like be like, I'm going to check
that's
my swing
true.
Now.
Yeah, I feel like...
That's my thought on ice cream
I feel
bars.
Like Miguel Sano when he was slumping, just check swinging at everything.
You're Eddie Rosario on the first pitch with those ice cream bars. You are swinging away.
My
doesn't
eyes
matter.
Are closed.
Yep.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with that.
So back to the point that you were making, the great point you were making, which is if this was an actual game that the Twins cared about last night, and they cared about it, but they didn't care about it on the level of like, we have to win this game.
Right.
If this was a playoff game last night, so Rich Hill goes five, you may have sent him out for a sixth. He only pitched 78 innings, but I think like he's kind of a 5-6 inning guy. He's not a guy that's going to go eight innings into a game. He is who he is at this point. Your first reliever out of the gate in a close game in which you are leading 2-1 is not Jorge Alcala.
Correct.
Although I think Jorge Alcala and the stuff he's been throwing this season, and he's mostly been used in, like, he's not being used in one-run game against Cleveland situations until last night. And he got fed a dose last night by the only three hitters that matter in the Cleveland lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you had an actual, like, will to win that game last night, Duffy would have been used. Although he hasn't been used in 3 or 4 days now, so maybe there's another story there.
It's been 3 days.
And Sean Poppin doesn't come in a close game, even if you're down. Like, he's not coming in a close game in that spot.
I'm with you.
So I think your football assessment's pretty spot.
And you know what? I can't really quibble here. Like, I can't sit here and say, that's a terrible approach. I would like to see Duffy throw... But not because of last night. I would just like to see him throw, period. Like, I'm beginning to get a little bit perplexed here. But yeah, this was the most important thing last night, I think, was what could Rich Hill give you? And what he gave you now was, and they're going to, I think, do this again. It was good enough to say, Rich, thank you. We appreciate your effort. Here are some mothballs. We're going to put you in those mothballs for 5 to 8 more days, and then we will have you pitch again. But yeah, I think the Rich Hill thing to me is the most important potential buildup to October.
Another positive for Rich Hill last night. So Lucas Giolito threw a no-hitter for the White Sox, and he had the second most swings and misses in any no-hitter in history. He had 30 swings and misses out of 100 pitches last night, which is nuts. Like, to give you some context, in a standard start, if you throw around 90 or 100 pitches, if you're pushing 20 swings and misses, that's a ridiculous night in the major leagues. 30 swings and misses, it's pretty obvious why he gave up no hits to a bad Pirates lineup. So Rich Hill is not on that level when it comes to swings and misses. he gets a lot of called strikes when he gets strikeouts because of that big looping breaking ball. Some hitters just freeze.
By the way, I love that breaking ball.
It's awesome.
That's fun to watch.
And then he'll sneak fastballs when hitters might be sitting on breaking ball. He'll sneak that 90-mile-an-hour fastball in when he's on.
Yep.
But I believe I saw he came into the night last night with only like 3 swinging strikes on the season. He had 6 last night. So
bravo.
He wasn't Lucas Giolito, but he had 6 swinging strikes last night out of 78 pitches, which, all right, it's not... No, you're not Randy Johnson in the late 90s, but it's a step.
He struck out 5. Can I give you the miles per hour and pitches for those 5 strike threes?
Football.
Because this is so much fun. So he didn't strike out a guy until the third when he got to Delino DeShields Jr., all right? 74.2 mile per hour curveball. He followed that up by striking out Domingo Santana. In the fourth, 74 mile per hour curveball, all right? Then he gets Perez on, hold on a second, wait for it, an 89.1 mile per hour four-seam fastball.
Just reaching back.
And then
reaching back.
And then he strikes out 2 more, DeShields again, 74 mile per hour curveball, and Cesar Hernandez, who I believe was the last guy that he struck out, same exact thing. So 4 of his 5 strikeouts came on that looping, sloppy, yeah. I absolutely love watching him pitch curveball.
Yeah, he's fun to watch for a bunch of reasons. The curveball, his angst, like he is so hard on himself.
Yes.
He
Well, the grunting last night was, it's fun to watch because you can hear like every...
Yeah, the biggest one, I can't remember which batter it was, but I think it was a right-handed batter and it was a full count. And he tried to drop the hammer breaking ball, and he just left it like he threw it.
Oh, yeah.
It was so bad. It didn't even hit the top of the strike zone.
Yeah.
So he throws this big looper that's supposed to break like into the bottom of the zone, and it missed high. And he walks toward the catcher, and just at the top of his lungs, drops a GD. And of course, there's nothing preventing you from hearing it. So my wife last night was working on a work project, just like with headphones in, and I don't know if she was listening to anything, but. But he yells that, and she looks up at me like, what just
oh, she heard it?
What happened? I was like, Rich Hill just gets, he's just a little bit hard on himself. And he pitches. Nothing to see here.
Football.
Here's one more for you.
Yep.
How does it make you guys feel that the Twins got to Shane Bieber last night? The Twins got to Shane Bieber last night.
They did.
And he still goes 6 innings and gives up only 2 runs and strikes out 10. That is getting to Shane Bieber. When he goes 6 innings, strikes out 10, allows only 4 hits,
mm-hmm.
and you get 2 runs off of him. I mean, that's what if you're going to face this guy either down the stretch or in a playoff game at some point, you need to win the game 2-1 or 3-2.
Yeah, and so he didn't pitch well for him at first, got stronger. It makes me feel good. I guess if I'm the Twins, that I do think that compared to their approach in the game at Target Field, their approach improved and they spit on his pitches a little bit more because he can really get to you quickly that way, and he didn't last night. That makes me feel good. The fact that for at least the first 2 innings of that game, he looked so shaky, and the final pitching line is 4 hits, 2 runs, 3 walks, and 10 Ks and 6 does not make me feel great. But did you guys see his career at home compared to the road and how much different that career has been so far? So he was going into last night at home 11-8 with a 4.17 ERA in 28 games and 27 starts, okay? On the road, 20-5, the ERA goes from 4.17 at home to 2.83 in 32 games, 31 starts. So he is actually far more statistically impressive away from Cleveland than in Cleveland.
That's interesting. I wonder why that is.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's also kind of a small sample size because he's only been a big league pitcher for a couple of years.
But he's so damn good when he's good that I'm surprised that the ERA is that much different in the home ballpark compared to the road ballparks.
Because we have to get to Bobby Marks here pretty soon. I do have some reckless trade speculation with the trade deadline.
Can I apologize for one thing quickly?
Yep.
I'd like to apologize here. Nelson Cruz, I'm really, really sorry. So I got home yesterday after our conversation, and Patrick also brought this up on his appearance on the show, about could Nelson Cruz become the first exclusive full-time DH in the history of baseball to win the American League MVP? And I got home and I'm like, I'm going to write that. That's pretty good. I mean, there seems to be a good chance. He's coming off in an outstanding couple games. He hit the big home run on Monday night in Cleveland. Yeah, I'm going to write this. I wrote it, published it right before the game. 0-for-4, 3 strikeouts.
Oops.
It's my fault.
Uh-oh.
I'd like to apologize.
Whoopsie.
I'd like to apologize to everybody involved. It's all my fault.
Take the column down.
Take the column down. No.
Or write one ripping him today for not being able to live up to the hype of being a top MVP candidate.
Why did I write this? I could write that. Why did I write this about Nelson Cruz?
Is it possible Nelson Cruz can't live up to the pressure of being an MVP candidate?
This is why he's bounced around.
Actually, you know what? Nick Faldo said something brilliant during the PGA Championship final round a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
Sir Nick Faldo. He said, some of these young golfers, they love to be noticed, but they don't love to be watched.
Oh, wow.
You want to build up your career, give me the credit I deserve.
Right.
But then when you get to that level
and you're watched,
now people are watching you. Can you live up to the pressure?
They don't like the spotlight.
Oh, cool.
Maybe Nelson Cruz doesn't like the spotlight.
That's a great observation by Nick Faldo. I love that. Hello, friend.
All right. Here it is.
Reckless speculation.
Did you see what happened last night? Trade deadline's 5 days away.
Oh, the Reds. Oh.
The Cincinnati Reds.
I feel like we should have a Reds update sounder for this week.
What would that even sound like? Do they have like a theme song or something?
Like, we do like Code Red. Do we have like a Code Red soundbite or something? I'm sure like there has to be something.
Just an
there.
Explosion sound because they're falling Code apart completely.
Code Red. Code Red. The Cincinnati Reds.
It's
not that tall of a task when you have two of the best pitchers in baseball, Sonny Gray and Trevor Bauer, to be one of 8 playoff teams in the National League. Really, the bar is very low for what you have to do here. You literally have to finish like slightly below 500.
And the league sucks, so.
It's bad.
The National League's not good.
There's like 3 decent teams in the National League. I mean, the Miami Marlins are 3 games above 500, for God's sakes. And the Cincinnati Reds have now lost 4 games in a row. They all season have deemed themselves, we're this feisty underdog team. We're going to be a playoff team. So they are 11-17, 5 days before the trade deadline. They've lost 2 games to the Brewers this week. Mm-hmm. They have 4 games looming with the Chicago Cubs, who are the second best team in the National League.
I was going to say, the Brewers are no great shakes themselves. And the Cubs are good.
To this point, they have said, we are not going to put Trevor Bauer on the trade block. Sonny Gray is probably more of a, they're probably just going to keep him at this point because it's a longer-term contract. But Trevor Bauer is a free agent at the end of the year. And the Reds are 6 games under 500. Minus 14 run differential. There's nothing fluky about it. It's not like, oh, it's a good team off to a slow start. It's the Reds. You guys, put Trevor Bauer on the trade block.
They got Mike Moustakas now. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Reckless speculation.
Put him on the trade block.
So
make it happen.
So they will trade Bauer if what? They win 1 game? No games?
Well,
I'm not asking what you would do. I'm saying, but it's the Reds.
What are they doing? What are they hoping for?
They're delusional.
What
more can I say? They're delusional. Like, we're not dealing. That's why I'm trying to get you to guess.
So here's the standings right now.
They're going to ride up to the last day of the season and hope they make the 8-team playoff in the National League.
So the Giants right now, after a walk-off win last night, the Giants are in the 8-seed position at 15-16.
God, the Giants don't want to be there. Bail out, Giants.
The Reds are 2.5 games back of the Giants, but they're also behind 5 other teams.
Yeah.
They have to climb over 5 teams just to get to... Actually, they have to climb over 6 teams to get the 8th seed.
I agree with you. They should trade Trevor Bauer. I just don't... They're delusional, so I have no confidence in what they're going to do.
We have more. Declan just texted
Reckless
us before the show.
Speculation.
Go ahead, Declan.
Yeah, Jim Bowden has the Twins... has a move for every AL Central team, and he actually has the Twins trading for Boston Red Sox pitcher Matt Barnes, another electric reliever who's having a down year so far in a shortened season, but was one of the nastier relievers and could be another bullet in the bullpen for the Twins.
Interesting. So Matt Barnes is one of the biggest strikeout relievers in all the baseball. In 2019, get this, Matt Barnes pitched 64 1/3 innings. He struck out 110 batters in 64 1/3 innings.
What's he going to cost me?
It was a lower grade. He was a top 30 prospect. It wasn't anyone in the top 10.
He's a free agent after next year, so you'd be getting a year and a half.
That's
of
the type
a
of trade they would make.
Flamethrower reliever.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't think Matt Barnes is necessarily automatically better than Tyler Duffy or Taylor Rogers when he's on.
But he would supplement your bullpen.
But he's for sure one of your 3 best relievers.
And they could use the help. The depth would definitely right-handed. Help them out.
Josh Winder, minor league right-hander Josh Winder.
Yeah, that trade has to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to happen. It'd be nice if it happened. No, it doesn't have to happen.
It for sure has to happen.
They should do it.
I'm going to tell you.
Reckless speculation.
Right now, I jumped on the conference call that they did with Derek Falvey yesterday, the Twins did. And can I give you a quick pie chart of probability of a Twins trade?
Sure.
All right. After hearing, and, you know, Falvey keeps the cards close to the vest, so I'm not saying that this is all basically take it to the bank stuff. But after surmising from what Derek said, the pie chart of probability of a Twins trade by Monday's 3 p.m. deadline, 90% they will not make a trade.
Really?
90% they're not going to make a trade. And I'm going to tell you why at the end of this pie chart. 5% that if they do make a trade, it is for pitching. All right? So 5%, I'm going 90% no trade, 5% for pitching, 3% it's for a bat, which I'm pretty convinced there's no chance there. All right? 2%, so this completes the 100% that if they do make a trade, it's going to be with a player to be named who's not on the prospect list in St. Paul, and it's going to be announced in December, which probably means it's not going to be a big trade. 0% that they give up a top prospect. I can tell you right now, they're not going to give up Rooker, Larnick, Kirilov, Lewis, that type of guy.
I do agree with that.
This year. I'm not saying that they won't ever do it, but they're not going to do it this year. And 100%, because I can already confirm it happened, that the odds are very good Monday at 3:39 p.m. or so, we are going to be told, you don't understand. We made a trade. Look at who we're getting back from the injury list.
Josh Allenson.
Yep, they've already pointed to that, and it's not entirely wrong. But fans hate that.
I think it's about the framing of it.
Do you want to call Derek and help him out with that?
Two things are true here. Thing number one is Josh Donaldson coming off the injured list, if the calf is fully right, is a huge addition for the Twins. That is a fact. If he's healthy, that's a fact. But the second thing that's a fact is that doesn't make up for, like, that doesn't replace or make fans or anyone feel good about, like, a potential trade that could be on the table that helps your team.
The three guys they're going to point to when they don't make a trade on Monday are Donaldson, Byron Buxton, and pitching-wise, Michael Pineda. They're going to point to those three and say, we couldn't have gotten those three in a trade if we had wanted to, so they're actually some of the best acquisitions of the deadline.
So here is, real quick, in our last minute before we get to our guy Bobby Marks for some, we're going to jump from reckless twin speculation to reckless wolf speculation here in a second. Why I like the idea of a Matt Barnes trade. I wish he was left-handed. If he was left-handed, it'd be even more of a no-brainer, because really, like, Taylor Rogers is your only real viable lefty unless you feel good about Thielbar. Good. And I don't know if I do yet. I don't feel bad about Thielbar, but I don't know how
depends
I feel
on the
about
situation very much with Thielbar.
But you're probably going to need another lefty in here at some point. So here's my thought. Once you get to the postseason, because that's what this is all about. This is not about, like, winning the division. It's about postseason.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to have 12 or 13 pitchers on your postseason roster. Probably 13.
Okay.
Maeda, Berríos, Dobnak as your three main starters right now, with Rich Hill kind of, we'll see. Odorizzi, we'll see. Pineda. But I think you can take your six starting pitchers, and three of them are starting, but the other three are just ready to eat innings when needed. Like, if the first guy goes down, it's almost a handcuff situation. All right, Berríos, you're handcuffed to Odorizzi today. If you struggle in the first inning, you're gone, and Odorizzi's coming in to take your place. Like, just have six guys that can give you four or five innings if needed.
Sure.
Just your best six long-form pitchers. And then you've got, now we need seven other guys, all right? Rogers, when he's on, lights out. Duffy, lights out. May, very good. Romo has been excellent. Clippard, when he comes back from injury. So that's five. I need two more guys. Ideally, there's a lefty in there, so maybe Thielbar has to be the other guy. But if there's another spot open, and it's between, like Alcala, I don't know if he'd be ready for that spotlight in the postseason, especially if I've got, like, Odorizzi and Pineda in reserve.
Yeah.
And then, okay, what about Zach Littell? I'm good on him. Sean Poppin, I'm good on him. Cody
good
Stashak.
On him, you mean not being on the roster?
Yep. I'm good on Cody Stashak not being on that roster. Devin Smeltzer doesn't need to be on that roster. If you can trade for Matt Barnes and put him in this group,
Right.
That's a lights out bullpen. He goes that can miss bats.
So if you do make the trade for Barnes, he goes into that A group of guys then. Because your A group is Duffy, Rogers, May, Romo, let's say Barnes. Like, that's the group that if your pitcher gets you through five, you feel comfortable starting to roll with in the sixth.
Yep. Imagine,
without question.
Imagine a five-inning
Kenta
Maeda start against the Yankees or whoever. Like, he grinds his ass, gives up two runs in five innings, and now you got to shut him down.
Yep.
You can allow one more run in the next four innings.
Yep.
And you go Matt Barnes, strike out Matt Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
You go, you know, some combination of like May or Romo into Duffy into Rogers.
Yeah.
You now have a four or a five inning bridge of strikeout relievers.
And if you lose, you lose then, but you don't question it.
Mm-hmm. Well, reckless I shouldn't speculation. Say that. Reckless question speculation.
Yeah, we question it regardless.
Let's actually roll right from reckless Twins trade speculation to reckless Timberwolves trade speculation. Judd Zulgad.
Reckless speculation.
Might not be reckless, Phil.
Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider. He also makes regular appearances on Doogie's Scoop podcast, including this week. And so you can find that on scorenorth.com. Bobby Marks, thanks for joining the show, man.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
We're doing all right, and it was unexpected. I think when the Wolves landed, when Flip Saunders was still here, and they landed the number one pick with Karl-Anthony Towns, that was expected because they were the worst team in the NBA, and the lottery at that time was more favorable to their odds. Nobody had any expectations this time around because the Timberwolves have just kind of become an afterthought during COVID with all the other leagues firing up, and so they're sitting on the number one overall pick. Our first question to you before we just pepper you with potential names and options is, how valuable do you think the number one overall pick is this year compared to a normal year or other years?
Well, it's not as valuable as it was last year.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, it's different when you have Zion or John Moran or when Karl-Anthony Towns or, some of these, there's not a marquee franchise player right now. I mean, that doesn't mean that, 5 years from now, there might be one developed, but there's not a player identified as kind of a franchise build your team around your player. But even so, it just gives Minnesota a lot of different options. I mean, I think that's when you control the number one pick and then you have 17 and 33, it gives you, a lot of options if you want to move back in the draft, if there's a player, an established player out there to go out and target. Certainly you can keep the pick and, they're going to have enough time to evaluate all those decisions with, the draft likely being moved back from October to who knows, maybe November or December here. So, it just gives you a lot of flexibility, something that they didn't have before, before the night of the lottery.
Who do you think that, the Wolves are calling first? So if you get this top pick and then start to make calls, what teams make the most sense do you think in this scenario, Bobby, to call first?
Well, I mean, I think, the first I want to, you're meeting with your scouts and you're figuring out, all right, how much is there separation from, let's say, number one and let's say number eight, right? Mm-hmm. So is there a big difference? I think, you can make an argument that there's not a drastic difference. This is a, I think it's actually a good draft. It's just not top heavy in talent here. So in that case, so if you're looking at teams like New York, maybe, who have, a couple future first round picks, they have from the Mavericks, they have the eighth pick, they have a group of young players. I mean, those are type of things that you would be looking at as far as moving back in the draft if it makes sense to build up your assets and your draft pick. So I think that's probably going to be the big internal discussion as far as what is the separation from a guy like LaMelo Ball to Tyrese Haliburton from Iowa State, right? I mean, I think LaMelo is probably the number one guy right now, but if you can pick up two draft assets and maybe an established player down the road. I mean, I think that's the same with a team like Atlanta, who's, I think they're at six. They've got a decision to make with John Collins, so how does John Collins fit with Karl-Anthony Towns? So those are a lot of the different things that you'll be discussing internally here as far as the stay or to move back. And I think the goal is if you can if you can try to upgrade the roster and also get maybe another draft pick, I think that's probably the direction you try to look at.
You can follow Bobby Marks on Twitter, by the way, at Bobby Marks 42, ESPN NBA front office insider. Is there any reason after what the Suns did, 8-0 in the bubble, and what Devin Booker did, is there any reason to make that phone call with like 4 years left on his contract?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make the phone. Yeah, I mean, you make the phone call at all 29 teams, no matter what happened in Orlando and them going 8-0. And I think you have to do your due diligence, and usually you just kind of keep a notebook of what you proposed and what they said, and you kind of maybe circle back a year from now. You never know, but yeah, I would think that Devin is probably off the table, you know, in any type of deal, just because of what is left on his contract, you know, especially how they played there. They're probably looking to build off that, not really kind of tear down and, you know, build through the draft. I mean, they've been doing that for the last 10 years. And I don't think that's kind of probably be the direction they're going to go.
Exactly. So as far as potential young stars go, who you think might be available on the market, who the Wolves could possibly flip this pick for and possibly more, where do you think that starts realistically? I mean, is a guy like Simmons in Philadelphia a guy that you could potentially try and make a phone call on and trade for, or is that probably shooting too high for Ben Simmons?
Yeah, I mean, probably too high, especially listening to what Elton Brand, their general manager, said yesterday, and I kind of agree with Elton said, is that you probably want a coach in place, you know, for at least a year to figure out what direction you go with Simmons and Joel Embiid, especially with Ben. I mean, he hasn't even started that rookie extension yet, and he's got another 5 years. But as I said, it doesn't hurt making the calls. I mean, the worst thing they can do is just hang up on you. Usually that doesn't happen all the time, but you never know. I mean, I think it's looking at teams like, you know, where's Brooklyn, right? I mean, they're going to have to go out and pay Joe Harris. I think Harris LeVert's probably untouchable, but it's just calling teams as far as figuring out what's Washington going to do with Bradley Beal. It's trying to, trying to find help for Carl and D'Angelo Russell. I mean, you kind of just go through, the list of, list of 20 to 19 teams. I always say there's always a team or multiple teams out there that who have been eliminated from the playoffs or maybe thought they were a little bit better and are in the lottery and think that, by changing the pieces around, it will help. Certainly, we'll see what happens in Sacramento. I think, certainly Buddy Hield's contract's a little bit rich for you, and I don't think he's worth the number one pick. But, you kind of just go through the checklist of different names, and eventually you kind of get to a decision where, hey, we're keeping this pick. Or maybe we'll take somebody, and then maybe down the road we look to move.
You mentioned Bradley Beal's name, and it's amazing. Like, it feels like he's been in the league for like almost a decade. I want to say like 8 or 9 years, but he's not that old. He's only 26 or 27, and he had his breakout offensive season in terms of just scoring. He scored 30 points a game for the first time. And I look at him, Bobby, and I think, man, I get Washington not wanting to let go of the John Wall Bradley Beal thing because it's never fully come to fruition, and they definitely feel like there's an unwritten story there. But I look at Bradley Beal and think he is just begging inside for a change of scenery and would probably play better defense at his next stop. And I just wonder, to what degree is Washington hell-bent on trying one more time with that backcourt versus, either settling for the Wolves' number one overall pick and hitting the reset button or some kind of a three-way trade that gets them a different player just to shake things up. But Bradley Beal's an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, he signed that extension, last offseason, so he's locked in for a few more years here. And you're right. I mean, I wrote about it. It's like, I guess if you're the front office, you do want to see where John Wall is health wise. I mean, John hasn't played since December of 2018.
Yeah.
Kind of pairing those two together, and then you've got some young pieces, but you will probably get a point in the road that you will have to make a decision here if this does not work out.
Where are the Wolves at in your mind too? Just as far as they've got Kat now, they've got Russell now. How close is this team to being not a championship contender, certainly, but just a contender for a playoff spot?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the challenge, right? I mean, the West is so, and I've said it, it's like the West is so unforgiving, right? Like, I mean, you look at, you know, Dallas was a lottery team, and then you get Luka, and now they're back in the playoffs, right? And then Golden State is going to be in the mix, you know, certainly will be in a probably top four, top five next year. That's, you know, that's the challenge that Gerson is faced with, right? It's like you cannot be content just because you go out and get D'Angelo Russell at the trade deadline. Now, like, all right, what is next? How do we get another player, an established player to play, you know, play with them? You know, what do we do with Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernangómez in free agency? What are our options with some of our own players here? So I think another year with Ryan helps. And I think you'll be up there where, you know, I think the goal is to try to get where, you know, San Antonio is now, where maybe New Orleans is now, where, Sacramento is now, where you're not kind of buried down in that basement, because once you get down there, I mean, it's hard to kind of come up. And I think, you know, having 17 and 33 are two good picks too. And I think that's another option for them as far as, can we get into the top 15 of the lottery if it makes sense there. And the one thing I know about Gerson, and I've known him a long time, is, and I think you see him this year, like, he's not content with what the roster is or was. When you turn over, and basically I think Carl and Josh are the only two guys when he took over, that he is going to keep on trying until, you know, the last stone is unturned to try to figure this out.
I've got last thing for you here. I've got one more Ben Simmons related question, and that if it were me running the 76ers, and that would be a huge mistake by the ownership, but if it were me running the 76ers, I would tend to lean toward keeping Ben Simmons, just because I know it's sort of ironic and that he's the one that's injured right now, but I think the durability is probably less of a question with him. But let's say they decide, all right, we've got to shop one of these guys. It's just not going to work, and we just need a change here. How do three-team trades generally work? Because I think if Philadelphia were to part ways with, let's say it's Ben Simmons, I don't think it would just be, all right, well, Timberwolves, we'll take your number one overall pick and go back into a pseudo-rebuild. You would probably have to ship the number one pick to a third team. Third team sends an established player to the Sixers, and then Ben Simmons comes to the Wolves. When three-team trades happen, how does that generally work?
Yeah, I mean, well, it starts with the initial call. I mean, if it's between Minnesota and Philadelphia, and then, you know, if Philadelphia's saying, well, no, I don't like the number one pick, you know, find me a team, you know, find me a third team as far as, and what, and you kind of have a list of players that you're looking for or the Sixers are looking for. It's kind of like a big jigsaw puzzle, right? I mean, it's like you just throw all the pieces down, and then you try to line them up here. And I've been part of a lot of different three-team, four-team trades here. It gets complex. I always say it's kind of like a house of cards, right? You kind of build it up, and then you pull one out, and the whole thing falls. But, yeah, that's kind of how you look at it. It's basically you're kind of doing the homework for the other team as far as if you're shopping one and if it's that third team there. So, you know, Simmons is – you're right. I mean, if I was Elton Brand and if I had to make a choice between Simmons and Embiid – I would not trade Ben Simmons. I would probably look to trade Embiid, just because I value what Simmons can do on a defensive end, certainly a huge guard here, and what the future kind of holds for him.
Yeah. Bobby Marks, ESPN NBA front office insider, Bobby Marks 42 on Twitter, and we appreciate your insight, sir.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Here it is. I got the trade after what he just said.
Oh, boy.
Reckless. John Collins.
You're going after John Collins.
I love the John Collins idea.
John Collins has been thrown around a lot by him, Doogie.
Power forward that can shoot some threes, grabs rebounds. Imagine having two big men that just both can sit outside and shoot from 20 feet and get inside and grab rebounds. Your roster would just be five dudes who can all shoot threes.
All right.
So here's what that would be a great trade. Okay. But in terms of a three-way deal, the 76ers. So I love the Ben Simmons idea. I don't think they're going to trade him, but this is as available as he has probably been because of just everything that's gone stagnant and wrong in Philadelphia.
Sure.
And they're going to have a new coach coming in and the front office is being shaken up. They're not going to want the number one pick because they don't want to rebuild. They want to reload.
Yeah, they've trusted the process long enough. Yes.
Yep. So I would call up Washington and I would say, all right, you guys are a disaster. John Wall hasn't played in 2 years. You guys need the number one pick. Like, I know it's it hurts to hear that, but you guys need the number one overall pick. We will give you the number one overall pick and even the number 17 pick. You guys can have those things.
Okay.
In return, you will send Bradley Beal, who can shoot threes, Ben Simmons cannot. You'll send Bradley Beal to Philadelphia. So now Philadelphia can have Joel Embiid inside, dominating big man, and Bradley Beal outside shooting threes, and you can have that inside-outside combination. The problem with Philadelphia is they get too stagnant, and they're too reliant on shots inside of 15 feet, and everything gets bogged down.
Ben Simmons,
right?
Can't shoot threes, yeah.
And Ben Simmons comes to the Timberwolves.
Wait, hold on a second. I thought you said it. So you just basically...
Reckless speculation.
So when you make the phone call to these teams, do you tell them you will do this?
Yes, I take charge.
Like, that is the... Like, they're like, but we don't want to. You're like, no, you will do this.
No, I once completed a four-team trade in a fantasy baseball league. I told everyone what they were getting and said, is everyone good with this? And they said, oh, this is great. So I get this guy and I give up these two.
What type of owners are these?
These are great owners, but I did the work. You got to do the work for everyone. I know Declan was just answering the phone. I told Judd, I once completed and facilitated a four-team fantasy baseball trade.
That's absurd.
You got to do homework for everyone else. That's what Bobby Marks said.
You're a GM, clearly. And yep.
I'm sending the first and the 17
to
Washington.
Okay, so you got Ben Simmons.
I'm sending Bradley Beal from Washington to Philadelphia.
Yep.
And I'm sending Ben Simmons to the Timberwolves to complete the newest, youngest, big three.
And Washington and the Sixers have no say in this trade, other than the fact that they will send their players to the new teams.
No, but I think they would welcome a 30 points per game outside sniper to work with Joel Embiid.
I do think, I'm telling you, Gerson being Gerson, I do think he trades that pick. I really do. I really don't think there's much chance that he's going to make that pick.
Reckless speculation,
which is fine.
Injected into my veins, yes.
Which is absolutely. That was as reckless as you could possibly be, because it was not only reckless by nature, but it was also you basically mandated trades.
That's correct.
So like it's reckless, and you're as Chili used to say, imposing your will.
Hey, for sometime this week, maybe tomorrow. So our old intern Duncan Goldberg sent me a great proposed trade for the Timberwolves.
Oh, wow.
He DM'd me yesterday. He's like, all right.
He loves the
reckless
world.
Speculation.
Cool.
What do you think of this? So I'll bring that up either tomorrow or Friday.
Let's do it.
But we got to get to write that down, predictions.
Reckless speculation.
Most sports talking heads make predictions, then hope you forget about how wrong they were. But not Mackie and Judd with Rami. This is the big leagues where we own our terrible predictions.
Write this down.
And keep track of each other's batting averages.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
It's Write That Down with Mackie, Judd, and Rami.
You like that?
Write that down. I don't have a pencil.
Well, remember that then.
Welcome to the most exciting segment in sports talk, where the hosts make predictions and hold each other accountable. The only show in the country that does this here on Mackie and Judd. Declan producing, and we have three guest listener predictors. We've got Nick, we've got Andy, we've got Brian, so we'll get to those guys. And here's how Write That Down works. Every single week, each of us make three predictions. They must be quantifiable. It's the Carl Anthony Towns will be the man rule that was instituted about 5 years ago.
After you said that.
Yeah, my prediction was quite simply, by the end of the year, Carl Anthony Towns will be the man.
I still don't know how you came up with that.
We keep track of batting averages and home runs. And if you want to participate, you can actually just DM me on Twitter. And I'm a week behind. I will get back to those of you who have DM'd me. We will get you in the mix and get you part of this, making your predictions. So we'll get to the batting averages at the end of the exercise. But first, let's get to an accountability session.
Write that down.
Judd, you're lucky. Nothing came off the board for you.
It was the first time in a while.
A bye week for Judd.
First time in a while, nothing's come off the board for me.
Maybe make some predictions that can come off the board this week.
That'd be nice.
I have one. Dex, don't, you know, just because you had a terrible week, don't get mad at me.
That's true.
I feel like Declan's mood, it pretty much goes with the write that down wins. We'll get to his in a second. Jonathan Harrison, last year's batting average champion, said Minnesota United will win their home opener. It took a while to get to the home opener. They lost 2-1 last week.
Yeah.
Manny Hill had nothing come off the board. Rami had nothing come off the board, although we did hijack his fill-in show. Did you guys know he's filling in right now, too,
as we do this Phil podcast? Michaels, yeah.
It's a regular fill-in now. Good for him.
We should hijack again.
I think we should.
Kind of funny.
At some point in time, he might get PO'd.
Yeah, I think maybe the first time was enough, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Play by ear.
So I told you guys Kenta Maeda would allow 3 earned runs or more in his next outing. I had no faith that he would bounce back from the high pitch count, and I was wrong. He was pretty good, although he wasn't great.
Rocco foiled your plan. Rocco foiled your plan by getting him out early. That's what happened.
It's true, yeah. I said for some reason that Byron Buxton will play at least 55 of the 60 games in 2020. However, I said Jose Berríos in his next start would bounce back from a mostly crappy start to the season so far, and he would pitch at least 6 innings and allow 2 earned runs or fewer. He did that, and he struck out 9. Mm-hmm. Yes! Jose Berríos is back.
Oh, God.
The listeners, Teague said Big E will be the Universal Champion by the end of SummerSlam. Did not happen. That would have been a stretch because he was not involved in the feud that was vying for the Universal Championship. Josh said Byron Buxton will have career highs in 2020 in plate appearances and finish top 20 in extra base hits and will win a Gold Glove. It is not really mathematically possible for him to finish with a career high in plate appearances at this point.
So was this a March prediction by Josh?
Yes.
Okay.
Pre-COVID.
Yep. A lot of Declan us lost because of that.
Took some hacks. Declan, you said Tyler Duffy will pick up a save before Taylor Rogers will. You said Dalvin Cook's contract extension will come by Friday at the latest. And you said Sasha Banks at SummerSlam will turn on her BFF Bailey.
When she lost the title, I was convinced it was going to happen.
They're teasing it. They're definitely teasing it, but it has not happened yet. They are still best friends and tag team partners.
You only got 3 wrong?
Only 3 and nothing right. So yeah.
Well, only 3 means that Judd Zulgad is our new batting average leader.
Yeah, Nelly Cruz, MVP, huh? Huh? Home runs, average, I do it all.
Judd Zulgad with a 447 batting average with 3 jacks. He's leading in both categories this season. Declan, 425, still looking for his first home run. He's very Juan Pierre-like, for those of you who get early 2000s reference.
I loved Juan Pierre.
Ben Revere
stolen base machine Juan Pierre in my National League. Rotisserie League.
Rami Makhlouf at 391 with a home run. I'm batting 330 with 2 home runs. Listeners at 260 with a home run. John Harrison, 209 with 2 home runs. And Manny Hill at 156 with a home
run. Write it down. You like writing things down.
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to, since our phone lines, we're a little bit worried that we're going to lose everybody here because we have 3. We're gonna bring Nick in first and let him rifle off 3 predictions because we know we can handle 2 on at the same time. So let's get Nick into the mix. Are you ready to take your swings here, Nick?
Absolutely. Sports dad, sports
Nick,
bro,
what's
sports
up, what's up, man? You, buddy. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, man. Very, very excited to be on the highly touted Write That Down.
Nick, you were born for this moment,
you
I feel
were,
like.
Man.
This is all you
this
right
is great.
Now.
This is great. I didn't realize this was our Nick.
He's on the job site right now, and he's still on Write That Down.
Whoa!
Loyalty.
Way to go.
Oh, yeah. The other guys can work. This is a life-changing moment.
Screw those guys.
Write this down.
So we're gonna go against protocol here because of our jam-packed guest list here. We're going to just let you rifle off 3 consecutive predictions and then get back to your job.
Yep, sounds good. All right, let's start off with the good old purple and gold. It's going to be a parlay, so I can hopefully touch them all on this one. So I know BC is kind of solidifying the number 2 role right now, and Justin Jefferson eventually at the end of the season will get that number 2 role, but he will finish top 3 in rookie of the year voting.
Ooh.
Irv Smith Jr. will finish as a top 5 points per game fantasy tight end, and let's say the website ESPN, since they're your affiliate. So
sure.
That'll be the Vikings one.
Okay. So that's a parlay. Those 2 things are tied together. Okay.
Correct.
Write this down.
Okay.
I got 2 Timberwolves ones, but I'm not a fan of the long play, so I'm going to scratch that one out. That was going to be, they're going to be relocated in the next 4 years, but who cares?
But who cares?
Yeah, Glenn's going to sit down with whoever the minority owner is, and like he did with Andrew Wiggins, and be like, so you're not going to leave Minnesota, right? You promised me.
Look me in the eye and tell me you're not going to Seattle. That's right.
Exactly. But, all right, so they will, as much as they want to get rid of the first pick, I think they are going to keep it. This is also a parlay for the Timberwolves. They're going to keep it and draft Anthony Edwards.
All right.
But they will trade the 17th pick that they got.
Oh.
Look at Nick going with the parlays, man.
I like this.
It's good.
By the way, if you want, you know, we can give you the extra one, and we can give you the long play one, too. We don't.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Timberwolves are gone within 4 years.
I mean, Seattle's an option. That, Vegas
that means
is an
that
option.
Our show has to be here in 4 years, and I mean that's dicey too.
I think even if we, I think we should commit. If we don't have a show in 4 years,
we'll just call
each other. We will still hop on Twitter and acknowledge the Write That Down standings.
Yes. All right.
Write this down.
It lives
you
on.
Guys, who's going to outlast who? You guys are Larry Brown, so. last one, gentlemen. I'd hate to do it, but maybe it can somehow reverse the curse. The Minnesota Twins will, at some point this postseason, they will be knocked out by the New York Yankees.
Wow. Oh, man. There it is. Buzz Killington coming in.
Way to go, Nick.
Yep.
So, do you really think you're suited to be the fourth guy in our group, Buzz Killington?
No. Ends on a high note. Well, Nick, since you have this massive platform here, is there anyone in your life you'd like to thank that got you to this point?
Yeah, sure. Let's go with my fellow sport gurus, Justin Price and Weiss Wahidi of the Elite Agency. Go buy a house from that dude. My two daughters, Ava and Harper, I love you. And then my eventual wife to be whenever I make that mistake. Adam, I love you. All right, thanks for having me on, guys.
Right,
Nick,
stuff,
this
man.
Is a great appearance.
Appreciate it, man.
My sports son, man, coming back with a bang. That was a really good appearance.
Can I hit drop and not drop the other guys?
You
here
should be
next?
Good. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yep, we're good.
All right, so I'll punch up Andy. Okay. You punch up Brian, and let's see if we can make this magic work. Andy, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
And Brian, are you with us?
I am here as well.
Awesome. All right, we did it.
Hey,
round of applause for us.
Yeah, way to go.
Yeah.
Great. I had nothing to do with that technical advancement.
Big time.
You should have seen me with the claw trying to organize all these three phone calls last night at 8 o'clock. I was like, okay, this person will go here. They'll go here. I'll go here.
He's drawn up on a whiteboard.
Yeah, seriously.
Great.
Doing arithmetic.
So, okay, let's start with Andy, and then we'll go Brian, and then Judd, Declan, Phil, and we'll go around the room three different times. Andy, are you here to beat out infield singles today, or are you here to hit bombs?
I think I'm shooting for a 2010 Joe Mauer double season.
Oh, I like it.
That.
Yeah, just
you're going to the gap on a consistent basis.
A little flared on the left field line, leg that thing out with a smooth leg first slide into second base. All right.
Write this down.
We'll start with Andy.
So the NFL will not complete a full season due to COVID, but will still complete their playoffs.
Interesting.
But we'll complete the playoffs.
So, okay. so it might be that like one team plays 12 games or something, but sure. They go off winning percentage or something. I could see that happening.
I like that prediction.
It's so hard to make up. Like in baseball, you can play doubleheaders.
Yeah.
Right. That's, you know what? The NFL should just play doubleheaders. Screw it. Just take some of the crappy team. Jaguars, sorry, but you're playing for 6 hours
Eight
today.
Quarters of football today.
All right, over to Brian.
Write this down.
Well, I'm a day late and a dollar short on the Nelson Cruz MVP train. I had a top five pick for MVP teed up, but with Judd's discussion and blog yesterday, I'm going to bypass that, and we're going to head up to Edmonton to the NHL bubble, and we're going to look at Nathan MacKinnon and company, and they're going to make a comeback. They will beat the Dallas Stars in the current
Ooh.
Round of the NHL playoffs.
Down 2 rip right now, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, that's a nice comeback
no
if they do it.
Ugh.
Interesting.
They fell apart in game two, man.
It happened.
2 rip lead, and they completely came apart.
Write this down.
Over to Judd.
The Vikings will have fans at their third home game of the season. So they announced yesterday that they won a fans for the first two games, which are the Packers and Titans. Their third game is in October against the Falcons. And they will have fans. So I'm not giving you capacity, okay? But they're going to allow some fans into that third home game of the season.
Is that a home run?
I don't think it's a home run. And I just made the prediction.
At the time of this prediction?
I don't know that it's a home run.
Okay.
I feel like
it's so far off still because they go after they play the Titans, they go on the road for two more games. I think if it was going to be quicker, it might be.
Plus, like his prediction counts if they literally let in like 5,000 fans or a fan.
A fan.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Well, I was going to make a comment, but
yeah,
let's
count.
Let's stop there.
Over to all right, over to Declan.
All right, I need some singles
right, I'll
here.
I'll say it. Paul Allen gets into the stadium, yeah, so yeah. That counts.
Oh, why? Why? Yeah. Why would
I
you
love
do that?
I'm a PA.
Why would
no!
you do
P and I are friends. We're friends.
No. Write this down.
All right. Wow. He would laugh at it.
All right, I need my Ben Revere, Juan Pierce single right here. Miguel Sano will strike out 10 times between now and next week's Write That Down. I need a very much a single. I need a hit. Miguel Sano will strike out 10 times between now and next week's Write That Down.
Okay.
So he's going to, well, actually, he's going to strike out almost twice per game. I mean, it's probably going to happen.
There's seven games between now and Write That Down.
You know, Write That Down karma can be a you-know-what sometimes.
Exactly.
And I hope it's
you
nine.
Are tracking pitches, and I like it.
Thank you.
You're trying to get on track.
Trash
I don't know. Fine.
I hate that. I don't want to stoop. I'm not going to stoop.
You don't like it.
All right. I'll go with my Wolves prediction so I can be the first one here. Write this down. The Timberwolves will trade the number one pick. They will trade the number one pick.
Okay.
Whether that's trading back and swapping for like the fourth or trading it for Bradley Beal or something, they will trade the number one
pick.
So
you're not going to give particulars at this time. You're just going to give us some.
I'll probably build off it in future at that time.
It's fine with me.
Write this down. Write it down. You like writing things down.
Over to Andy.
So the Vancouver Canucks will not only beat the Las Vegas Golden Knights in the current season, but will win the Western Conference Finals and make it to the Stanley Cup Final.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that, man.
Ooh.
They're pretty damn good. They're young. They're fun.
Brian, your second prediction.
So back to the Twins. I had another one teed up that I was saved from. My ride or die with the Twins is Byron Buxton, and I was going to roll with Buxton not ending up on the IL, but we're too late on that.
But here we are. Yep.
You're very fortunate. He beat you to it.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to go the pitching route, and we're going to look at Kenta Maeda, and he is going to finish top three in the Cy Young voting. I have a little bit of concern with his pitch count from the near no-hitter, but five innings, 83 pitches. He looks sharp. Top three Cy Young.
He is nasty, man. He's nasty. I think when that trade went down, a lot of people just looked and said, well, wait a second. He's in the bullpen for the Dodgers, and he only pitches 150 innings. Like, yeah, I mean, those two things are true, but he's filthy. And and in 2020, you don't really – like, the guys who go 200 innings are almost becoming dinosaurs now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not as much
don't
of a thing.
Tell Jack Morris down. That.
Jack Morris, didn't he go 300 one season?
Yeah, and you know something what?
Like write it down. You like writing
all
things
complete
down.
Games, okay?
And I'm sure in the
and
eighth
he drank
inning,
Budweiser after every one of them.
And I'm sure him throwing his 140th pitch fourth time through the order to like the Blue Jays in the 80s was just as effective as if they were to bring in a lights out reliever.
Right.
But I digress.
Jack Morris, 10-8 with a 3.28 ERA on the season in 16 starts, 16 games as well, 28 2/3. I'm sorry. What's up?
I was texting you guys last night. Man, it seems like Oliver Perez has been in the big leagues for a really long
perfect.
Time. Yeah. Hopefully, Bert can tell me when Oliver Perez came into the big leagues. And 10 seconds later,
God,
Oliver Perez drafted by the Padres in 1999.
It was great.
All right, over to Judd.
Okay, so
write that down.
So Cleveland is going to start Clevinger tonight against the Twins. We know that for a fact, but you can write this down. Mike Clevinger will be traded to the Yankees by the Major League Baseball trade deadline Monday. Mike Clevinger is going to be dealt. In fact, I think Cleveland's starting him to attempt to showcase him a little bit here. Mm. They can find pitching. They desperately have to get bats. And this guy, clearly there's something off about him. Mike Clevinger will start tonight, but then be traded by the deadline to the Bronx Bombers.
How bad does Clevinger want to get out of the clubhouse that banned him? Now, it's his doing, by the way, but I'm sure there's some bad blood there. He's basically pitching for his ticket out of town tonight.
Yes.
He might throw a no-hitter tonight.
Is he cool with cutting that hair if he goes to New York?
Does he have to cut the hair?
I feel like he does.
I think you're right, Dex.
I don't know if he's going to be cool with
so
that.
That is so stupid, by the way.
It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Can't stand it.
And why don't some of these guys, like Garrett Cole shaved his face, right?
Yeah. Yep,
if you're Garrett Cole, you say, all right, I'm the best pitcher in baseball.
Yeah, you're right.
I'm setting strikeout records.
I'm not shaving.
And I'm going to have a beard. And if you guys don't like that, then I will sign somewhere else. It's ridiculous. It's 2020.
Write this down.
Declan.
All right. Danielle Hunter will return to padded practice in this month of August. So there's five more days left. He'll return to padded practice. He hasn't practiced yet.
I don't know if I like what Write That Down has become. I feel like I'm the old school guy who's just like, you know, swinging
Hold
for
on,
doubles
wait, wait,
and home
don't
runs.
Say, I'm doing the same thing. It's Declan who has turned.
Do
you know what you are, Declan?
Yeah.
You are the Jacques Lemaire of Write That Down.
Trap game, baby.
You are the left wing bleeping lock making
trap
this
king.
Boring. Poor people call in here to give home run predictions,
That's
and you're
fine.
Like, I'm predicting the Vikings will practice on grass before the end of the month.
Check down Declan over
That's
here.
That's right.
It's ridiculous.
Still works.
Write this down.
All right. So I had a Clevinger prediction, too. My Clevinger prediction was that this would be his last start for Cleveland in 2020.
I don't want up it now.
All right. Write this down. I'm going to say that the Twins will – that Clevinger is inspired to pitch great tonight because he probably wants to just get out of Cleveland for a million reasons. So I'm going to say even though he is inspired to pitch great, it's a parlay. The Twins will beat Clevinger tonight, or they will beat – I'll say they'll beat Cleveland tonight just so, you know, it doesn't matter if Clevinger gets the
– Oh, it's still close to paint yourself a corner.
They'll beat Cleveland tonight, yep. And this will be Clevinger's last start for the Indians in 2020. So give me that parlay.
Write this down.
It's a home run if that happens.
I don't have a pencil.
Well, remember that, yeah. Dan.
If both those things happen, it's a home run.
Yeah.
Over to Andy, your final prediction.
So this is a Judd prediction, but nice. I don't think he has to leave the room because I doubt he remembers what guest predictors predict after the segment.
You never know, Andy.
So after the trade deadline, Judd will pen a classic Zolgad colon article on Score North ripping the Twins for giving up too much at the deadline.
Oh, I love it.
Write this down.
And you know what?
He'll do it with glee.
If they do, you will not stop me. What you said will not stop me. Wow. If they give up too much, I will rip them.
Wow.
Especially in this year.
Judd cares more about front office accountability than he cares about his own. Write that down. Batting average. It's amazing. Right. So, Andy, since you
Andy's right, he might be right.
You've got this gigantic, massive platform right now. Is there anyone you'd like to thank in your life that got you to this point?
Well, I've been working in public health for several years, and the last 6 months have been really rough, so I just wanted to thank you guys for providing an outlet for, you know, to get away from the response for minutes at a time. And then I also just wanted to give a shout-out to Dave Harrigan, former producer, for helping get this segment going in the first place.
Dave Harrigan, mastermind of a lot of our favorite bits. And, Andy, it is a little bit troubling that during a pandemic year – And all the rough things probably happening in your life that you turn to Minnesota sports for a good news reprieve.
That shows you how bad 2020's been, that you had actually turned to sports in this town.
Yep.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, see you, Andy.
Thanks.
All right, Brian.
Write this down.
Your final prediction.
All right, more bubble action for the final prediction. We're heading down to Orlando for the NBA bubble. Write this down. The Toronto Raptors will represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals.
And that would be amazing.
That'd be fun.
Because
good for them
to lose one of the greatest players of this generation and to maybe even get a little bit better is pretty crazy. So
I would feel like they've got that vibe.
Yeah,
got that vibe going.
They're kind of the new San Antonio Spurs, where they just have a great system and
really well coached. Yes.
Like that. So Brian, since you have this platform, this gigantic platform, is there anyone in your life you'd like to thank for getting you to this point?
All right. I want to give a shout out to my good buddy, Jeff. We used to talk for several years, friend of the show, Jason Stark, when he would do his weekly trivia on Mike and Mike in the Morning. We'd trade back and forth our answers on the trivia and just a lot of chitter chatter that way. So good morning to you, sir. And a thank you to all of you guys for having me on here this morning as well.
Right on, Brian.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking your swings, man.
Thanks. Appreciate
all right,
it.
We'll talk to you later. And we'll make one final trip around here.
Write it down. You like writing things down.
All right. My final write that down of this week. BC Johnson will lead the Vikings wide receivers, Declan, in touchdown receptions this season.
Ooh.
So I'm not talking about tight ends, Irv Smith.
Okay.
I'm talking about the wide receiver group. BC Johnson's going to lead them in touchdowns in 2020.
All right.
Okay. Dex.
I like
write
that.
Write this down.
My guy, it's another golf prediction. Justin Thomas. My guy will shoot 10 under at the BMW Championship this weekend. Justin Thomas, JT, 10 under, BMW
right.
Championship.
JT.
My Write guy. This down.
Cool.
And not J-Day, by the way.
Not J-Day. That's my guy, but not.
Don't confuse JT with J-Day.
They're my boy, but nope, JT.
And write this down. The Twins will trade for a pitcher of some kind before the trade deadline. Twins will trade for a pitcher of some kind.
So he's going to be living, breathing. There's going to be a pulse in play.
I like the Matt Barnes idea. Just keep.
He's going to have an arm.
Adding strikeout guys.
He's going to have an arm attached to his body.
Yeah. Like the more. Remember when the Yankees beat the Twins in was it in 2017? It was the play-in game. It was the wild card game.
Yeah.
And the Twins knocked Luis Severino out after like early. 20 minutes.
Yep.
It was like, holy cow.
I was very excited.
Now they get the Yankees bullpen.
Don't be.
The Yankees can't possibly have that many great relievers,
no,
can they?
No, they were
they
better.
They had an 8-inning bullpen bridge of lights out, strikeout artists.
Yes, they did, sir.
So,
write this down. Woo! Write it down. You like writing things down.
We've been informed that Patrick Roycey wants to add a write that down prediction to the
Write it down. The winning score in the BMW championship will be lower than the winning score week's Northern Trust. Write that down.
That's a Declan Goff prediction.
That's not even a sacrifice bunt.
No.
What
a joke that was, wasn't it? God almighty, why didn't they play it at Fountain Valley out in Farmington, for God's sake?
Okay, Judd and Declan, will you indulge Pat and I and allow us to talk golf for like
2 minutes? I saw your tweets about this.
I like golf. Okay. I have no problem talking golf.
Dude, golf is so fun right now, Pat. This is the most fun because you still have sort of once in a while Tiger is still around and grabs the interest, but like the non-Tiger crop of golfers is so much fun to watch right now. Am I wrong? Are you having fun watching golf?
Well, here's not last week because it was ridiculous. The fun of golf is not to see these guys throw misery, but to see the possibility that if somebody screws up, he can make double bogey, right?
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the trouble with TPC Twin Cities until they tricked it up a little bit. When the seniors were there, everybody came, hit it down the fairway, hit it on the green, and either made their birdie putt or didn't. There was, you got to have some adventure in it, right? And that was the problem last week. And they're supposed to go back there in 2 years. They better dig themselves some ditches before that.
Yeah.
You know, do something. I mean, they have all those great courses out in the East. Liberty, they've had it at Liberty. They've had it, at a bunch of those New York courses. And why they decided to go up to this cow pasture and let them shoot 30 under.
Cow pasture.
The big news from the week, though, is Phil Mickelson turned 50 a couple months ago. And he's been priming his game for 2 months for his Champions Tour debut. He comes out and shoots 60-64 the first 2 days of this tournament.
Like four ahead already, right?
Yes.
You think Hollis is down on his knees begging him to show up in Sioux Falls? I don't think he'll get him because he got two of the majors coming up here, and he's got the U.S. Open where he's trying to get in shape for. Although I don't – do you think 60-64 gets you in shape for a U.S. Open golf course? I don't think so.
Probably not.
Not quite the difficulty. But supposedly Hollis's tournament in Sioux Falls in the second week of September is the first one they're going to let fans in for.
Okay, here's a question. So I've been listening to the No Laying Up podcast, which is incredible. Declan's nodding his head.
Yep.
And it's just like four or five young golf fans who just built this huge podcast and just like spend an hour and a half breaking down all the tournaments and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they posed a question. Would you rather have Brooks Koepka's career to this point, four majors, but only like seven tour wins, or Dustin Johnson's career to this point, who has like 22 wins
and one major? I'll be Dustin Johnson all day long.
Yeah, I think I'd take Dustin Johnson. Okay. He's only got the one major, though.
He's got more money.
Pauline Gretzky's involved.
Yeah, he's got Wayne as a father-in-law.
I think Wayne's a pain in the ass. He's always lecturing. He's always lecturing him. He's asking like Pauline is like still 18.
As long as he tells me stories, Pat, about the Oilers days, I don't care what Wayne does to be a pain in the ass.
That's true.
Tell me about that time coffee passed the puck.
DJ, and I think DJ's a pretty decent guy. He had a little cocaine problem, but what the hell?
We all do.
Yeah. And
sports.
We all, some of us wish we did, but we never did. But anyway.
Do you know how thin you could be right now if you had a coke problem?
That's right.
You'd be in great shape. Keith Richards like.
Get me some greenies and coke and let's go. Here, we'll get rid of our poundage, our pandemic poundage.
You'd be 162 and playing guitar.
Yes. I'd look like Rich Hill pitching the first inning last night. What the hell was that? He would look like he was. He was unbelievable. But anyway, back to golf. I guess DJ probably, because I think Koepka's kind of a jerk, don't you? I mean, what's he shooting off his mouth for?
Yeah, just to steal another anecdote from the No Laying Up guys, they basically said Koepka's like the guy that, like, he wants you to know that he totally could have played a different sport, but he's just like, he's playing golf,
Right. But the thing about, Phil, this happens all the time. Look at Duvall. For 18 months, Duvall was the best player in the world.
Yes.
Yeah.
And for 18 months, Koepka was the best player in the world, but that's his 18 months.
Jordan Spieth for 2 years was the best player.
Yeah, right. And that, I thought, was sustainable, didn't you? But I guess he can't hit it far enough.
The key is, boys, don't get in too good a shape. Yeah. Duvall got in unbelievable shape. Koepka, too good a shape. Be a little bit fat.
Duvall married the gal with six kids or something. I think that screwed up his head. But he was a weird dude. He's not bad on TV, by the way, Duvall. He's bland. I mean, he's low-key, but he says good stuff. But you know, DJ's got a career here. I mean, he's got what, 10 more years left?
Yeah.
That he'll end up winning 40 tournaments, probably. But he, just think of all the ones he's kicked away already. He's kicked away 10 of them.
Yeah, his first one was the, well, he kind of got screwed 10 years ago with Whistling Straits. But
hits it in a pile of dirt, and they tell him it's a trap.
Three putting in Seattle a few years back on the 18th mm-hmm. was from 12 feet. That was kind of a...
Well, Such and I actually talked about this yesterday, but a friend of mine always said Ernie Els's great advantage was he had an uncluttered mind. There weren't a lot of thoughts going on in there.
Yeah.
And I think DJ has the same, which allows you to forget you shot 80 at the 3M Open and went home.
So being stupid helps out is what you're saying.
No, I'm just saying not having deep thoughts. He doesn't read a Mishner book on the way to the golf tournament or something and try to learn 800 pages on Hawaii or something. He doesn't care about that stuff, I don't think.
I feel like we should talk golf every day on the show. I've watched more golf in the last 2 years than I've watched in my
life. You know, I hadn't watched hardly any, even when it came back, but now the last 3-4 weeks I've been watching again. And last week it was, I guess, somewhat fascinating, but the PGA Championship, you know, that was a tough, rugged golf course, and this kid still shot, what, 17 under or something like that? I mean, they're so damn good, it's unbelievable.
Now, Tiger brought up a good point about, he basically said, I think this was earlier this week, because he's playing back-to-back playoff events here, and he said, for 20 years, I have basically gotten used to and have built the strength up of being able to block out 25,000 fans wrapped around a hole.
Yeah.
And now we're out here playing major tournaments.
That was an advantage, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like these guys, a lot of these guys, you look at the top of the PGA Championship and there's dudes who are playing in their first summer of majors, even Morikawa, and they're not dealing with 15,000 fans staring at them on every single hole and
or
the
yelling
pressure that
brings.
Things.
Yeah. Well, let's face it, Phil, though. When this kid started, he was hitting at places that nobody ever imagined.
Tiger, you're talking about?
I was at the Ryder Cup in Valderrama, Spain. I don't know how the hell I ever tucked the paper into that one. But from 290 to 310 yards in the middle of the fairway, Seve had them grow rough. So Tiger would have to hit it 285, right?
Yeah.
Or because back then, 300 was unheard of. You know, I mean, it he was hitting it there, but he was hitting it from 25 yards closer than everybody else. Now he's hitting it from 20 yards farther away than quite a few
of them.
And
the problem now is it's not about making courses longer. It's like, well, Bryson can hit the ball 350 yards. It's about more dog legs. It's about more challenging greens.
It's about when
strategy.
You miss the fairway. And when I not only miss the fairway, when you miss the middle two-thirds of the fairway, the ball then runs off down into the grass, either right or left. You have to hit. The fairway's got to be crowned, and the rough's got to be substantial. So not only do you have to hit that. You want to hit it 350, okay, pal. But if you don't hit it in the knob in the middle 20 yards, you're going to end up down in the grass someplace. And that grass has got to be substantial, too. So anyway,
there it is. That's a lot of golf talk right there.
Yeah. You know, back to Rich Hill. Watching the first inning last night, I wanted him to be hospitalized. What the hell was these big windups and kicks and
the grunts kept coming, Pat.
Yeah,
he grunted the whole game.
He was like, I was saying, this guy's got no chance to go two innings, and then he was pretty good after that. But I think they must have given him a sedative after the first inning.
Well, he just kept on grunting, though. My God.
Quaalude or something. But he pitched pretty good. They got to feel good about that. You know, I mean, he's, you know, Cleveland doesn't have the greatest lineup, but he, you know, he threw pretty good. I thought.
Yeah, he threw fine.
That's it, by the way, 80 pitches, 75, yes. 80 pitches. He's going five.
Pat, I'm telling you, they are not concerned about what he does in these games. This is all their build-up to getting him to October.
Yeah, but I think they realize they need
they don't go into Rich Hill start saying, we need to win this game. They go into Rich Hill start saying, how's Rich Hill going to pitch?
I think they want to make sure, despite the fact there's probably going to be no fans and we might actually end up in a bubble, I still think they want to be the home team for three games. They want to finish in the top four.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
You know, so they don't want to get on a plane and fly out to
They were not concerned
last night about actually trying to win that game as much as they were making sure that Rich Hill pitched pretty well and got out of there at the right time in their mind.
I hate to bring up a caution, guys, but when I was getting my scouting reports on Evan Grant from Evan Grant in Texas and then from guys in Seattle who covered him, Dutton, who loved him.
Yep.
But Dutton said he can look like Nelson Cruz can look like the worst hitter you ever saw for 10 days. And you say, is he done? And then boom, boom, boom. And then for 2 weeks, he's a machine. He has been mixed in with that home run he hit the other night to win the ball game. He has been doing some serious waving at breaking pitches.
Yeah.
I mean, Bieber last night, his first at bat, he didn't come within it.
Nope.
The estimated distance of those pitches total from his bat were 5 feet. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, we were talking off the top of the show, Pat. So Bieber last night, the Twins got to Bieber last night.
Yeah,
the Twins
got to Bieber. Two guys. Yeah.
And getting to Bieber is he goes 6 innings and strikes out 10 and gives up a couple of runs. Like,
yes.
That's getting to Bieber.
Yeah, and the only reason you got to him is he walked a couple of guys.
Yep.
And but yeah, that's pretty good stuff. And now you get a resolved Clevinger tonight. So
Clevinger's going to be pitching his ass off to try and get traded, though.
And he might be traded, yeah.
He's got inspiration.
You're right, though, Phil. Maybe last night was the big, not 2 nights ago, might have been the biggest win of the season, considering you have to face those two guys the last two games here.
What did your spies tell you about Duffy? I saw you tweeted this out after the game.
They said he was fine. It was matchups. I don't know. They said he's fine. He's ready.
I'm nervous, Pat.
And then he didn't pitch last night either, but he didn't, because they were behind, so.
I'm okay with them not using him last night.
Yeah, I am too.
I just want to see him.
They said he's fine.
Okay, I just want to see him.
Alcala, Alcala, whatever the hell his name is. Why isn't he Alcala like every other? We got a real problem with these Hispanic guys, right? All of a sudden, we spent when Zoilo Versalles came here as a rookie, we all call him Versalles, right?
Yeah.
We didn't know any.
Yeah, if you're from Fulda, it's Versalles.
Yeah, hey, Versalles. And then finally, about halfway through the year, somebody, not Herbie Carneal or whoever was on the air, told us, it's Versalles. Okay. So he taught us that lesson, right?
Yep.
So you got to watch these pronunciations for these Hispanic fellas from Cuba. And back then, they were all from Cuba, right?
Says the guy whose last name is Royce, by the way.
Yes.
Having
but,
Jorge try
but
to pronounce
what I'm
that.
Saying you is now we got the center fielder in Chicago who's one of the great young players of all time who wants to be Robert instead of Robert.
And he should actually change it. Robert is better.
I don't approve of that. And now Alcala, right? Shouldn't it be Alcala?
I think the second part, the second syllable would
Jorge
be,
Alcala,
would be
But you're
accented.
Right. You're right. It should be Robert.
Oh, hell yes.
I like that one much more. It's much sexier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, well, Pat, we'll talk to you again on Friday, and people can find your Royce Unchained podcast as well.
And I'm about to do a baseball one with Mr. Reavers, so that'll be posted up a little bit today too. If he and Joe are done salivating about the wonders of the Republican Convention yet, so okay.
Very exciting. We'll break that down in a special
bonus
episode.
Be talking all about that
episode on Mackie.
Some
and
great
Joe.
Speeches.
Super exciting. Uh-huh.
Speaking of cocaine,
yes, wonderful. All right.
See you, Pat. All right, that's a wrap on Mackie and Judd. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Don't forget Action Movie Rewind this Friday. Karate Kid.
I got to watch
Judd's
it today.
First viewing in 30 years.
I'm going to watch it today.
Wax on, wax off.
Before some hockey.